Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our conversation continues with Dr. David Blumenthal, National Coordinator for Health Information Technology within the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Blumenthal, accelerating health IT may require advanced breakthrough research to overcome certain barriers to adoption. To that end, would you tell us more about the Strategic Health IT Advanced Research Projects Program, or SHARP?
We had, in our broad authority, we had the opportunity to single out some areas for intensive short and long-term research. The health information technology is an extremely dynamic field, just like all information technology. You know, every year there's a new iPhone, and every year there's a smaller computer, and Intel has a different chip. Well, all that is happening in healthcare, plus the science of medicine is changing. So we felt strongly that we needed to make available some funding for breakthrough research that would help the sector take full advantage of changes in technology. The strategy we chose is to fund a number of centers, academic centers, to follow some themes. So one theme, for example, might be to make health information technology more usable. One of the biggest barriers to adoption, as I mentioned, is logistical, technical. People are uncertain which technology to adopt. They're not sure how to use it once they adopt it. If we could make the electronic health record as easy to use as an iPod or an iPhone, we wouldn't have that problem. It would just get adopted. So making it usable is really important. It's a really complex tool, though. There's a lot of information in it. There are a lot of rules that have to be built in to make decision-making better and so on. There's a lot of work that has to be done at the human-machine interface. So having a set of really smart people working on making it usable, we thought was a good investment. And there are a series of other things like that. We need to create this electronic postal service for health information. There are a lot of interesting technical problems with that. How you identify the people who are sending and receiving information to make sure they are legitimate senders and receivers. And once you have information available, how you use those systems to retrieve it. So using the internet and the software and to do searches, directed searches that are private and secure is another interesting research area. So we put $60 million into the what we call the Strategic Health Information Technology Advanced Research Program, or SHARP. And the applications for that are just coming in right now.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the National Health Information Network, or NHIN, and its prototype architecture?
The NHIN, as it's called, is the postal service I've been discussing. It is a set of standards, protocols, agreements among the users, security devices and mechanisms that create a network for exchange of information. It's one version of it. Now, think about the Postal Service in the United States compared to, let's say, the Postal Service in France or in Britain or in Spain. Each of those postal services is probably a little different. Some have more offices, fewer offices. They all use letters and they all use stamps, but they're probably organized a little bit differently. And they also we now have several parallel ways of sending information. We have FedEx, we have UPS, DHL. It's not clear that we want to have just one postal service for health information. We may want to have several that have different costs, different requirements, different purposes. So the Nationwide Health Information Network is a kind of first version of a alternative of what could be a number of alternatives for moving information around the health system in a way that meets patients' needs and their caretakers' needs. The Connect software is software that was developed in the federal government. If we change the metaphor a little bit from the Postal Service and think about a nationwide highway system as a way of moving things around. So let's imagine that the Nationwide Health Information Network is a nationwide highway system. How do you get on and out off that highway system? You need ramps. Once you're on the system, you can go, but you've got to get on and off. And those ramps are located for convenience of the users of the highway system. Connect is a software mechanism for getting into and out of the on-ramp, off-ramp, and connects to the software and the exchange system of the NHIN. And it, in doing so, overcomes some of the barriers that arise from the fact that we got lots of different electronic systems that may want to get access to that exchange network. So you need to have a kind of, instead of having a highway system that with off-ramps of just one width, you have multiple widths. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to manage these technical problems of connecting everybody's electronic health system to a common exchange mechanism.
Dr. Blumenthal, the success of a nationwide interoperable health IT infrastructure in the U.S. will require a high degree of public confidence and trust, two critical elements to the safe exchange of health information at a national level are privacy and security. Would you tell us about your efforts to secure data and promote trust in this new environment, and what remains to be done?
A number of things. The high-tech law changed the privacy and security protections for health information as part of the HIPAA legislation. And we're working with the Office of Civil Rights at the Department of Health and Human Services, which is writing the regulations for those new protections. The law also said to us, in effect, we're going to write these additional protections, but we're not sure they're enough. We want you to go look at gaps and give us recommendations about how to close those gaps. So we have asked one of our advisory committees to, in a sense, do a study and make recommendations to us about closing any additional gaps and moving the privacy and security precautions that are available to a new level. We've just begun that work, but I hope in the next few months to be getting reports from that committee and recommendations, and hopefully begin the process, if it's necessary, of recommending to the Secretary or recommending to the Congress what additional protections, if necessary, are needed, if any, are needed.
With all the efforts that you're going through, are you leveraging experience or expertise outside the healthcare field in order to learn from their other efforts that have gone on of similar magnitude?
We most certainly are trying to leverage expertise from other fields. We have held meetings on technologies that are being used elsewhere to share information or to collect information. We hope to work with the new cybersecurity czar in the area of information security. We work with the chief technology officer and the chief information officer in the White House very closely in getting sharing the lessons that have been used elsewhere for standards and for software development. We deal with a lot of companies that are in other non-health businesses, and they bring their non-healthcare experiences.
The two committees that you mentioned earlier, the policy committee and the standards committee, what's the composition of those committees, and do they have folks who may be outside of the health area?
Yes, they do. And so the policy committee was actually appointed with a very structured membership. The General Accounting Office, the Government Accountability Office, appointed 2/3 of the members, roughly. The Congress appointed several members, and the Secretary appointed a couple members. It represents a diverse set of experts. I'd say the majority are from the health sector, on the policy committee and on the standards committee. But we have, for example, experts on the security of information that have, as I said, that can work well beyond the health sector. The Health Information Technology Standards Committee has a gentleman from Boeing on the committee. And we have people from places like the Gartner Group. So we've got a pretty broad representation. I'd say it's healthcare-centric, but we do have a few people from outside. A lot of people from industry, from academics, from healthcare delivery systems.
You used an electronic health record when you were a clinician.
Yes.
Yes. How do you get doctors to change their behavior in order to find this instrument or tool helpful? Are you exploring other technologies that will enhance your ability to let the clinicians modify their behavior?
Well, let me say that the good news is that I think the next generation of physicians, mm-hmm. the people that are in medical school now, in training now, they're going to use electronic health records, no question about it. And I think a lot of the folks who are early in their careers, people under the age of 40, let's say, who are practicing medicine under the age of 45, they're not going to finish their careers without using electronic health records. The challenges we face are mostly for certain elements of the provider community, physicians of a certain age and smaller to mid-sized hospitals that may not have the money or the expertise to put these in place. And in those cases, our strategy is to, A, give them a financial incentive, B, give them lots of logistical help. We're setting up a program of something called regional extension centers, mm-hmm. which are going to be community-based organizations that are available to help doctors sit elbow to elbow with them and help them get online and use the equipment. We're targeting small practices, primary care practices, underserved areas as the sort of first frontier for this. So I think it's I think most physicians know that this is going to happen. Most hospitals know this is going to happen. The question is when. And I don't think the federal government is going to put this kind of money into electronic health records again anytime soon. So if you're practicing medicine and you kind of know this is going to happen, it strikes me that this is the time to do it because you can make some extra bucks. And next time you try it, you'll be all on your own.
What does the future hold for the nation's healthcare system? We will ask Dr. David Blumenthal, National Coordinator for Health IT, when the conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.